This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine a heist where the thieves don't even break into a vault.
Right.
They don't steal a single line of source code. But they somehow manage to just walk away with the entire brain of an artificial intelligence.
Which sounds like a movie, but it's, you know, actually happening.
Exactly. I mean, today we're looking at a shadow war happening right under our noses.
Yeah.
The weapons are algorithms and the battlegrounds are just these massive server farms.
It really is a completely new paradigm. Like, we fully transitioned out of that era where AI was just pure technological breakthroughs.
Yeah.
Now it's an era completely defined by high-stakes geopolitics and, well, national security.
And that is exactly our mission for you today. Welcome to this deep dive into the sources. We've got a fascinating stack of AI industry briefings, some legal updates from late June 2026, and the central theme running through all of this is control.
Right, control.
We're asking, you know, who gets to build the smartest AI? Who is actively trying to steal it? And how are governments, from the federal level all the way down to your local state legislatures, frantically trying to draw boundaries around a tech that just fundamentally defies borders?
And as we go through these documents, I think we really need to be clear for everyone listening. Things are moving at a blistering pace.
Yeah, blistering is the word.
The traditional line between, say, a regular commercial software product and a highly classified national security asset, that line doesn't just blur anymore. It's been completely erased.
Gone. Totally gone. So let's unpack this by looking at the new gatekeepers. Because the biggest bombshell in the stack is OpenAI's June 26th release of the GPT 5.6 series.
A massive release.
Huge. And they rolled it out in three distinct tiers. You've got Sol, SOL, their flagship model.
The heavy hitter.
Right. And that one is priced at $5 per 1 million input tokens and $30 for output.
Which is a steep jump for output.
Yeah. Then you have Terra, geared for daily tasks at $250 in, $15 out. And finally, Luna, the low-cost, high-volume one at $1 in, $6 out.
It's actually a really brilliant tiered pricing structure if you're trying to capture the entire market. I mean, from complex enterprise problem-solving with Sol, yep, all the way down to mass-scale automated tasks with Luna.
I do want to pause on those numbers for a second, though, because I see this kind of pricing structure everywhere in the briefings, but the gap between input and output is just massive.
Oh, yeah.
With Sol, it's literally six times more expensive for the AI to spit out an answer than it is to just, you know, feed it a document. Why is there such a huge discrepancy?
It really comes down to how these large language models compute under the hood. Mm-hmm. When you feed an AI a massive document, that's the input. The system can read and process all those tokens in parallel.
Okay.
It essentially looks at the whole chunk of text at once, which computationally is highly efficient.
So reading is cheap because it can multitask.
Exactly. But when it generates an answer, the output, it has to do that autoregressively.
Meaning word by word?
Right. It predicts the very next word, then uses that new sequence to predict the next word one at a time. It's a strictly sequential process.
Wow. Okay.
So generating text is incredibly computationally heavy compared to just comprehending it, hence the $30 price tag.
That makes total sense. But and here's where it gets really interesting with this GPT 5.6 rollout.
Okay.
You, as a regular developer or, you know, a business owner listening to this, you cannot just go sign up for Sol today.
No, you can't.
General public release is not happening yet. Right now, access is entirely restricted to a limited preview of about 20 approved partners.
Just 20.
And the sources are very clear here. This was done at the request of the U.S. government. OpenAI even put out a statement warning that this kind of government pre-approval shouldn't become the, and I'm quoting here, long-term default.
Right.
So what is happening here? Why is the U.S. government suddenly dictating who gets to beta test a commercial product, and why on earth is OpenAI playing along?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you really have to look at what's happening to the competition.
Okay, lay it out.
OpenAI is essentially getting what we might call the carrot. They get to launch their model, yeah, keep their momentum going, generate all these headlines, even if it's just to a pre-approved VIP list.
Right. They stay in the news.
But Anthropic, they are getting the whip.
Ah, you're talking about the Fable 5 blackout.
Precisely. According to the briefings, it has been 15 days since Anthropic's new Fable 5 model was hit with strict export controls.
Wow.
Traffic for both Fable and their older Mythos models is literally sitting at zero.
Zero.
They're completely frozen out of the market.
And the political mechanism here is really what caught my eye in the sources, because this wasn't a law passed by Congress.
No, it wasn't.
Four bipartisan House reps sent a letter demanding answers from Commerce Secretary Lutnick. They wanted the legal justification for freezing Fable 5, and they gave a hard deadline of June 26.
And what was the Commerce Department's response to that?
Total silence. The deadline passed, and they just didn't answer.
Incredible.
So looking at the sources, what we are seeing is the U.S. administration essentially bypassing Congress altogether.
Yeah.
They're setting this new de facto standard where they pre-control frontier models using executive orders and Commerce Department export controls.
That is the reality of the landscape right now. And to be clear for the listener, we are strictly reporting the facts from these congressional briefings.
Exactly.
We aren't taking any political stance on whether this administration's heavy-handed approach is right or wrong. We're just looking at the documents.
Absolutely. We're totally neutral on the politics. But for the industry, the undeniable reality is that the federal government is now the ultimate, unquestionable gatekeeper for deployment.
Right.
And, you know, to play devil's advocate for a minute, the government's paranoia isn't entirely baseless here.
Not at all.
The threat of foreign adversaries extracting this technology isn't some theoretical white paper scenario anymore. It is happening in real time. Which brings us to the great AI heist.
Yes. This is where the whole concept of technical warfare gets very, very concrete.
Yeah. So Anthropic sent this explosive letter to the leaders of the Senate Banking Committee, Tim Scott and Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
And in it, Anthropic formally accuses an organization linked to Alibaba's Quenlab of executing a massive distillation attack against their Claude model.
And for anyone who hasn't been deep in the trenches of AI security research, a distillation attack is a very specific, highly insidious kind of theft.
It's not just a hack.
No, it's not someone breaching a server and downloading the source code.
Okay, let's unpack this for you, the listener. Imagine you have a master chef with a closely guarded secret recipe.
I like this analogy.
A distillation attack is basically like hiring 25,000 spies to sit in the chef's restaurant and just order every single combination of food possible.
Right.
But they aren't just writing down the final recipe. They are tracking every micro movement the chef makes, every dash of salt, until they can perfectly recreate the food in a cheaper kitchen without ever seeing the actual cookbook.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. To ground that in the actual technology, you are taking a massive, highly capable, very expensive model, the teacher model, like Claude.
Right.
And you bombard it with questions. But you aren't just looking at the text it spits out. You are using the highly accurate probability distributions that Claude generates to train the weights of your own much smaller, cheaper student model.
Wow.
You essentially siphon off its core reasoning capabilities.
And the sheer scale of what Alibaba allegedly did is just staggering. The briefing notes they used roughly 25,000 fake accounts to launch 28.8 million attacks on Claude between April and June alone.
That is a massive operation.
And they weren't just asking it to write haikus either. They specifically targeted its software engineering and agent reasoning capabilities. They went right for the crown jewels.
What is genuinely fascinating here is the audacity of the timeline.
Yeah.
Because this massive distillation attack happened after the White House issued the Kratzius memo back in April.
Oh, right.
And that memo explicitly warned the industry and foreign entities that AI distillation is considered a direct national security threat.
So they knew.
Anthropic is pointing out to the Senate that despite these very clear warnings, the bleeding of American intellectual property just continued unabated.
And this is actually the first time a major U.S. AI lab has publicly named a massive Chinese firm like Alibaba as the culprit. I do have to wonder, though, how verifiable are these claims?
That's a fair question.
Because Anthropic obviously has a vested interest in proving they are victims, right? To justify getting out from under those export controls we just talked about.
Exactly. And again, just to maintain our neutrality here, we're just laying out the allegations exactly as they're presented in these Senate letters.
Right. Alibaba has officially declined to comment on the accusations, so we're just reporting the source material.
Right. But verifiable or not, this incident perfectly illustrates why the Commerce Department is resorting to those extreme export controls on models like Fable 5.
Because of the smuggling.
Yeah, if distillation attacks are essentially digital smuggling, the government's view is that you have to lock down access to the API entirely to prevent the leaks.
So whether you are OpenAI trying to build a massive model like GPT 5.6, or you're a state-backed lab trying to clone one using 28 million fake queries, you eventually run into the exact same physical wall.
Computing power.
Computing power. You need ships. And right now, the entire industry is trying desperately to cut costs and break their total reliance on NVIDIA.
Which leads us nicely to the hardware bottleneck.
Yep.
And this deck of sources contains one of the most remarkable developments in semiconductor manufacturing we've seen in a decade.
You're talking about the Jalapeno chip.
Yes.
OpenAI and Broadcom just unveiled their first custom inference chip. It's an ASIC, an application-specific integrated circuit designed exclusively for running LLMs. The stated goal is to cut inference costs by 50% compared to using standard NVIDIA GPUs. Now, the briefing says they went from design to tape out in just 9 months. I know you follow this space closely. Is 9 months actually fast, or is that just Broadcom PR spin?
Oh, no. 9 months is blistering.
Really?
In traditional semiconductor manufacturing, finalizing an architecture usually takes years. To do it in under a year is practically unheard of.
But the source mentioned something about how they pulled that off, which is the part I really wanted to ask you about. They actually use their own AI models to help optimize the physical design of the chip.
Yep.
How does an AI actually design a microchip? Like, is it drawing blueprints?
Think of silicon like a massive, incredibly complex city grid. You have billions of logic gates.
Okay.
The AI treats this layout like a giant spatial optimization puzzle. It can analyze billions of permutations for the physical placement of those gates to reduce the microscopic distance that data has to travel.
Oh, I see.
Shorter distances mean less heat generation and much lower latency. Humans can do this, obviously, but an AI can simulate and solve that spatial puzzle exponentially faster.
So AI is now actively participating in building the physical hardware required to make itself faster.
It's the ultimate feedback loop.
That's wild.
You build a smart model, you use that model to optimize the architecture of a new chip, and then you use that highly efficient chip to run an even smarter model. Jalapeno is slated for a small-scale rollout late this year, with mass production in 2027.
Wow.
And remember our conversation earlier about those $30 output tokens.
The inference costs.
Exactly. Inference, the act of running the model to generate answers, is the long-term hidden cost of AI. If this chip actually cuts those costs in half, the scalability of these models fundamentally changes.
It's just wild to think about. I mean, on one hand, we have the federal government fighting these massive geopolitical shadow wars over chips and API access.
Right.
But while Washington is looking at the globe, local state governments are dealing with the immediate, messy human impact of AI right in their own backyards.
This brings us right to the human boundary, because state legislatures are clearly not waiting for the federal government to figure this out.
No, they aren't. We have a lightning round of state-level legislation from the final week of June that really shows the friction here. Let's start in California. The state legislature unanimously passed AB 2148. That's 76-0 in the House, 38-0 in the Senate. It just went to Governor Newsom's desk. This bill effectively bans AI from acting as public school teachers by legally requiring that teaching staff be natural persons.
Natural persons. That specific phrase is going to become the defining legal battleground of the next decade, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
It's a direct, preemptive strike against the fear that underfunded public school districts might try to replace human educators with hyper-patient, low-cost AI tutors.
I mean, I see both sides of this. Mm. On one hand, you have an AI tutor that never gets frustrated, never loses its temper, and can offer highly personalized one-on-one attention to a struggling student for fractions of a penny.
True.
But on the other hand, childhood development is deeply psychological. Is California right to draw a hard line that says humans absolutely must teach humans?
It's the core societal debate right now. California is essentially arguing that the empathetic connection of a natural person is a non-negotiable feature of education, not just a bug to be optimized out.
Then you go over to Rhode Island, where Governor McKee just signed 3 new AI laws. They also used the natural persons requirement, but they applied it to therapy.
Interesting.
Yeah, AI psychological counseling is now legally restricted to licensed natural persons. And if you run a general purpose chatbot, it must now have self-harm prevention protocols hard-coded into its system.
And there's a penalty, right?
A steep one. If you violate that, it's a $15,000 daily fine.
The policy design on that Rhode Island law is actually particularly clever. Do you know where that $15,000 daily fine goes?
Let me check the notes. Oh, straight into the state's suicide prevention programs.
Right. It forces the developers to internalize the societal cost of their technology. Rhode Island also mandated that if a hospital uses an AI to draft your medical records, doctors have to explicitly disclose that fact to the patient.
Wow.
It's all about establishing transparency and maintaining human boundaries.
But it's not all smooth sailing for these state regulators either. Down in Arizona, Governor Hobbs is currently in the middle of a massive budget standoff, and she vetoed 88 bills in a single day.
Ouch.
Yeah. Three major AI bills got caught in the crossfire and completely wiped out. One of them was a bill to regulate deepfake images, and another was a child chatbot safety act that had actually passed the state Senate unanimously, 28-0.
And she vetoed it anyway.
Her office didn't even give specific reasons for the AI vetoes. They were just collateral damage and a partisan political fight.
It really shows how fragile this patchwork of state laws really is.
Exactly. And that's what I keep bumping up against. While Rhode Island and California are frantically trying to build these legal speed bumps to protect teachers and therapists, the sheer velocity of the capital behind these AI companies might render state laws completely irrelevant.
You're looking at the financial realities underpinning all of this.
I am, because the stakes are astronomical. Look at the briefings here. OpenAI has officially delayed its initial public offering to 2027. CEO Sam Altman essentially had two choices. He could take the company public now at a lower valuation in a rocky market, or he could delay and maintain their private valuation of $1 trillion.
And he chose the trillion.
He chose the trillion.
$1 trillion. I mean, to put that into perspective for you, that is roughly the gross domestic product of the Netherlands.
That's insane.
For a single private technology company.
And to really highlight the sheer scale of the capital moving around in this specific tier of frontier tech, I want to briefly point out a tangent in the briefings. SpaceX just settled a massive $25 billion debut bond to pay off some bridge loans. When they opened that bond, they had $89 billion in orders from investors just waiting to hand them cash.
Wow.
The appetite for funding these civilization-scale engineering projects is practically bottomless right now.
And this ties directly back to a very insightful piece of commentary in our sources from an attorney named Kung Jin Kim. Kim points out something crucial for any listener who works in tech or business. API access is now being treated as a national asset.
Meaning, if your company is building an app or a service or an internal workflow on top of GPT 5.6 or Claude,
securing trusted partner status with these AI labs and, by extension, the federal government, is now just as critical to your company's survival as your actual coding skills.
Wow.
You aren't just buying software off a shelf anymore. You are negotiating access to a highly regulated, geopolitically sensitive national resource.
Okay, let's take a breath and recap this incredible journey we've been on today.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. We started with the federal government acting as the ultimate gatekeeper, pre-approving who gets to use OpenAI's new GPT 5.6, while throwing Anthropic's Fable 5 into an export control freezer without even answering to Congress.
Yep.
We've seen the technical reality of digital heists, with 25,000 fake accounts running distillation attacks to siphon off Claude's reasoning skills.
The digital smuggling.
Exactly. We've explored how AI is now treating silicon like a spatial puzzle, designing its own custom jalapeno chips to cut inference costs in half. And we've seen local governments desperately trying to build firewalls around human jobs like teaching and therapy.
It is a massive structural shift in how society operates. And, you know, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, building on something you noticed in that report about the OpenAI IPO delay.
Yeah, I kept looking at that IPO delay note, and there was this brief, quiet mention of something called RSI, recursive self-improvement. And frankly, looking at that concept, it sounds like pure sci-fi. The idea that an AI becomes capable of rewriting its own core architecture without human intervention. Is that actually happening now, or is that just boardroom hype to justify their $1 trillion valuation?
It's the most critical question in the industry right now. Internal communications suggest their entire financial timeline could change if RSI accelerates.
Now so?
Well, it's a compounding loop. The AI makes itself a little smarter, which allows it to write better code to make itself even smarter and faster and more efficient.
Wow. So here's the provocative question we want to leave you with today. If AI is already actively helping design its own custom hardware, like we saw with the 9-month turnaround on the jalapeno chip.
Right.
And if we are rapidly approaching an era of recursive self-improvement where it literally writes its own code, at what point does the sheer compounding speed of AI development permanently outpace the ability of any government, any export control, or any state law to actually contain it?
Going back to our earlier thought, if you were trying to put a chain link fence around a cloud, what happens when that cloud suddenly turns into a Category 5 hurricane?
Exactly. The physical boundaries are gone, and the digital ones are moving way faster than we can write the laws. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources today. Keep questioning the information around you, look for the mechanisms behind the headlines, and we'll see you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.